Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, you've been suspended 5 games.
I do live in Colorado, so I'm more likely of all of us. I'm
no, that's a good call. You do live in Colorado.
Yeah, I'm the most likely of all of us to get nabbed, to get busted for it. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to make fun of him because J.R. Smith got suspended 5 games for violating the league's substance abuse policy, by the way, if you haven't heard. And Adrian Wojnarowski of Yahoo Sports reports it's for weed. I want to make fun of him because of the whole, like, oh, no, he's a leader. He's matured. He's over all that nonsense because this is, like, the third thing that's happened. He had all the partying that happened during the playoff series and then this. But I just can't be bothered by weed. It's just too prevalent in the NBA. I can't – and it's our society. It's just – and if you have a problem with it, I don't have an issue with you having a problem with it, but I personally am not, like, I just can't sit there and be like, oh man, he's really irresponsible and he's a problem for the team. Like, JR's a problem for the Knicks because he has no conscience in shooting, not because he likes to smoke weed.
I think that it's, I mean, it's dumb, but I mean, how did he, didn't he like post a picture on Instagram which raised attention or something like that? Is that what happened?
Yeah, I read something about there being a picture of him with a blunt.
Yeah, I don't follow him on Instagram, so I don't know, but I feel like it must have been that story about the Fast Five truck. Like, even though it turned out like he denied it and his brother denied it, I feel like once that story hit, the league was like, "All right. maybe we should test him."
If you're driving around in a tank, you're going to get tested.
Yeah, I mean, it's dumb. You know that you can get tested twice in the off season if you haven't been tested twice already. Why do it? And then outside of that, like, I kind of feel the same way you do. He should know better. It's going to cost him what, like $1 million? I think it is for the 5 game suspension.
250. It's only 252. Well, I guess it's costing 252 in the suspension, and the fine will cost him whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So there we go. So, I mean, you know, he'll have to pay for it. When he comes back from his injury, which is, I think, slated sometime between mid-October and mid-November, I mean, once the season starts and he's healthy to play, he'll have to sit out the 5 games after that. And then other than that, like, I don't know, I just feel like we're really heavy into drug talk with the NBA lately. And I think there's certain levels of concern that need to be there. And outside of that, like, I think something like this is below that threshold. But like you said, if you have a problem with it, I have no issue with you having a problem with it.
I mean, if he's dealing would be a problem.
Well, right. Yes.
Yeah, I just can't get bothered by it. I mean,
as long as
part of me at this point, is just like, you know, What is the drastic difference between that and going 70 miles an hour in a 55 mile an hour zone at this point?
Right. All I want is responsibility.
Yeah.
And if that, I mean, and you could say, well, what he's doing is irresponsible. Hey, I can't fault you with that logic. But, you know, he'll pay for it. The team is paying for it in a way without having his services. And that's that. Good job, JR.
Let's say the suspension will kick in after he's back from injury, and then they'll probably fib a little bit with it, but they're not going to want to screw around with the league too much on that. They're not going to want to be like, oh no, he's totally healthy when he's not.
Right.
But so let's say he misses like the first 5 games of the season, and then JR misses another 5 for the suspension. So that's 10 games.
Okay.
So he misses an eighth of the season. The concern is, from a basketball standpoint, There's a lot of talk about this. The Knicks, I've mentioned this a lot. The Knicks could be a dominant team that finishes second in the East again and really is in position to contend to be a challenger to Miami. They could also take a massive step backwards and get lapped by a bunch of other teams. Starting off slow is not going to help them.
Right.
And that's obvious. Not like starting slow helps anyone, but I think if you're the Knicks, you had so many things go right for you last year, you want to replicate that as much as possible. And a big part of that was they came out storming out of the gates. Like, holy crap, the Knicks are amazing out of the gates. And if JR is out for a significant period of time, that's going to take away one of their major weapons. Maybe it'll give them more opportunities to get Bargnani integrated, to get Amari Stoudemire more of a role, to figure out different shots for the offense. Or maybe Melo will shoot more, which will be entertaining as well. But I think either way, like, there's got to be a little bit of a concern for are the Knicks going to – the Knicks have a higher bar now, I think, to try and start off hot than other teams do. That's your hot basketball analysis for them.
I think I'm all for Melo taking more shots. I think with volume scores like Melo, I mean, he is not Monte Ellis inefficient, you know? And so, I don't know, like, you're going to work more pick and rolls so you can get Raymond Felton shots, or do you want Carmelo taking shots? Like, obviously, there needs to be some balance.
I want Raymond Felton throwing lobs to Tyson Chandler on the pick and roll. That's what I want.
I don't, because then Tyson Chandler's going to break in half at some point.
So Melo took 22 shots a game last year at 45%.
That sounds low to me.
How many do you want him at? 26?
Yeah, I think 26, 27.
27 shots a game?
Why not? Iverson did it, and they made the finals.
It's science. It's science.
They had a defensive center. I'm sure there's an Aaron McKee on the Knicks somewhere. It could work.
What else is going on in the NBA?
Is starting slow for the 76ers winning games?
Yeah. If they start out 1-5, they have, you know, it hasn't been a good start for them.
That's true.
They need to go winless in November.
What was that start? Was it the Nets or maybe the Magic years ago where they started like 0-17 or something like that? Am I misremembering that? There was some team that started out really slow like that. I think the Sixers may want to break that record. That would be fun. Or maybe they won the first game and then lost like the next 18 or something like that. Something along those lines.
Do you think it's going to get legitimately competitive? For tanking, like, teams are going to be like, this isn't working, we have to do less, like.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it's happened in the past, like, you know, Paul Pierce sat out with an elbow injury in 2007, right? 2006, 2007. Like, I think that's competitive tanking. The Spurs kept David Robinson out probably extra time. Like, that's competitive tanking to me. And I think we saw it with the Warriors a couple years ago when they ended up with Harrison Barnes because they were going to lose their draft pick, I think, if it was one spot lower or whatever. And I think that I think you will see teams as the stretch run happens, I think you'll see some mysterious injuries all of a sudden.
You know, I've been talking about Breaking Bad on our CBS Campfire chat all morning. And spoiler alert, if you haven't watched the series, mute it for like 15 seconds or like a minute and a half. I just have this image of Sam Hinkie after he makes one final call before the season to try and trade Thad Young, and the GM on the other end says, "I'm sorry, we just can't do it." And Hinkie hangs up the phone, and then the camera pans, and it's him looking at a Lily of the Valley plant. Just looking at it, being like, long cut back and forth.
He's just like flicking one of the berries back and forth.
Just brooding.
Just playing with it.
Oh, Ion Basketball Podcast, where we envision Sam Hinkie poisoning Thad Young. Not going to get that on the Basketball Jones.
No, not at all.
I don't know, man. It's Friday. Friday.
It is Friday. That means you can go down the NBA rabbit hole on CBSSports.com.
Yeah, man, those things are so cool that you're doing. And I'm not just being company man there. Like, that's a really cool idea that you came up with, that you executed. They're fun. It's the kind of stuff that we don't get to see on CBSSports.com all the time. If you guys have any interest, you really should go check it out. Zach does this really cool thing where he just bounces it along whatever his brain takes him from through the pathways of the internet, and they're always really entertaining, and it brings up stuff. They're just really great pieces. They're just really fun.
Thank you. I'm having fun doing them. I am a little worried that, I don't know, like 3 months from now, I'm going to be out of material. I will scour the entire NBA internet for it.
I think it's going to be like Doyle, who hates his hate mail bag. He despises doing it. He doesn't want to do it. He just,
I don't know. I feel like this is stuff I just do every day anyway, and right? That I've done for years, ever since I've found out about YouTube. And so at this point, if I haven't gotten tired of it by now, you know, I may run out of material, but I don't know that I'll get tired of it.
And it keeps you off Twitter, which I think is a good thing.
Yes. Especially in the off season. Well, regular season too. I don't really like talking about basketball on Twitter. Just because I feel like it's so hard to put context into everything.
I have a question. If you guys are wondering if we're going to talk about basketball, we will eventually. Skip ahead like 15, 20, a minute, like an hour. Just be safe. Skip ahead to an hour. Work backwards. Maybe.
However long this episode ends up being, skip to the final 5 minutes. That's when we talk basketball.
So clearly all the athletes in the world that we follow, they can't actually track their mentions because it would be like a nightmare. Right. Like it would just, like, there's no point in it. There's too much. It's a volume. There's not a whole lot they're going to get through. And some of them do, like, oh, hey, whatever. They have a little conversation. They dip in, and that's cool. I honestly think that you should really consider doing something similar where you don't follow anyone and just make observations and don't actually have conversations with anyone.
Oh, that's a – I mean
– try it for a week and just
like, – just unfollow everybody?
And just, like – yeah, don't – well, no. Just do you use TweetDeck?
Yes, I do.
Just eliminate your timeline.
Okay.
And then – only reply to something in your mentions if it really bears mentioning, and don't actually, like, if they try and argue with you about something, just ignore. I just want to see what would happen if, because it actually might be kind of cool because you could then focus more of your energies on just sharing observations about food, culture, music, and random things about basketball.
This is actually not a bad idea that I could find myself stretching this week-long experiment into forever.
Like you could purify your it's like reaching Twitter enlightenment.
Oh my
right?
God! This I would be a born again tweeter.
Yes. I'm serious. This is a great idea. I think that this has a lot of potential for you as a person and for everyone. And I think your stress level would go down. Your lady friend would appreciate it. The life would smell sweeter.
Yeah, life would smell sweeter. The spider would be out of my car.
Yeah, you have a spider in your car. Spider in your car, and I have a bee in my backyard. We have problems.
Yeah, I don't like insects. On Facebook the other day, my mom posted this centipede or something from Peru, where it was seriously the length of a guy's forearm. And I made the pronouncement that this is why I am against saving the environment, because the environment is scary and it will kill you. So I'm pro logging. I'm pro like oil fracking. I'm pro all this stuff because I just want I want the world to be a wasteland with no insects.
That should be in your Twitter profile, is what that should be.
Yeah, no insects and no timeline for me to go through on Twitter. That's what I want.
The worst part of King Kong has nothing to do with King Kong, the movie. It's those things that scene where they fall to the bottom of the canyon. I have nightmares about that scene.
Yeah. I mean,
everyone's telling me about the bee, and they're like, do you realize the epidemic, like the catastrophe that we're facing with bees? And I'm like, then create synthetic ones. We have billions of dollars in research. We can do all this cool stuff. Make a fake bee. We can do this.
Now I feel like the synthetic ones are from the X-Files movie, where they have like just that farm of bees for no reason that I don't really understand. I've never understood what the point of that part in the movie was.
Oh, that part of the movie you don't understand.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, everything else makes sense to me, but it was just like, okay, Jillian Jacobs, is that her name?
Yeah.
Like, she's going to run through a bee-infested tent, and something goes wrong. Like, I didn't really get it. But this, I came to the realization that, or my lady friend helped me come to this realization. She was like, you know, that giant bug in Peru, there's all these like deadly spiders in Australia, there's all this stuff, like all the places we want to go have stuff that will kill us except for Europe. I was like, you're right, from now on we only vacation in Paris. We vacation like three times or like once every 3 years, save up, go, and that's it. That's the only place we vacation to, and I'm actually fine with that because we went to Paris last year and I loved it. So I am fine just saying screw you rest of the world with your deadly bugs and everything. I'm going to Paris where the only thing that will kill me is probably a gypsy.
We're doing like a rabbit hole podcast because you're mentioning the X-Files movie made me look up the album soundtrack.
Okay.
Which was amazing because it had one by Filter, which is this great song. It has a song called Flower Man by Tonic. Walking After You by Foo Fighters is the big single off of it, but it's okay. Wayne's Beacon Light is on there. One More Murder by Better Than Ezra, very good. The Cure song on there more than this is incredible. Also, 16 Horses by Soul Coughing. Sarah McLachlan's on there, And the Dust Brothers did a version of the X-Files theme. It's amazing. I have to re-find that album. That's incredible. I love that album.
That's actually a good movie, I think. And I was never like I watched an episode of the X-Files here or there.
I'm stunned that you were not an X-Files a file. That's shocking to me, considering the amount of time it takes to keep up with its intense nature and the fact that it's so much sci-fi. That's stunning to me that you're not.
I think because that's actually a really good point. I think it's because DVR hadn't been invented when it was on, and so like it was like appointment viewing, and I just wasn't very much an appointment viewing type of person, except for Seinfeld and stuff like that. So I think that's probably the reason. But I bet if I went back and just binged on the entire series for a month, that would be pretty fun.
I think it would be funny if you did and then blogged about it, because if you hate watched it, I think that's what you would do.
You hate watching X-Files. For me, X-Files was a lot like it's a lot like South Park. Like, I don't dislike South Park. I like South Park. Whenever I watch it, I enjoyed it. But it was nothing I ever thought, oh, I really want to watch that right now. It was just like a happen chance viewing every time. And then the movie, like, I loved the movie.
I watched two things with my father coming up as a kid. There are two things that I always watched with my dad, Chiefs games and the X-Files. Those are the two things that we absolutely made time to spend together. Those are the only two things in life that my father and I consistently spent time together doing.
Yeah, mine was 49ers games, Braves games, and then the fine programming on CBS.
Oh, well done. Okay, so let's talk Cavs.
Oh, right. We should do a basketball podcast today.
I'm like always the one that has an eye on the shore. Like, you're just drifting out to sea.
And I'm just paddling. I'm just like, let's see where the current takes us.
And I keep pointing back, being like, Captain, you realize there's land right back there. We need to stay close to shore.
I'm fishing right now. Stop. Leave me alone.
I watched Master and Commander the other day for like the 500th time.
I've never seen it. I want to see it. I just have never seen it.
I think it might take you a little bit because it's hard to understand a lot of the dialogue. It took me like three times to catch it. I have hearing issues too as part of it. It's phenomenal. And you know what? The ship breaks down at one point in the film, and then they have to repair it and then try and take off. And that's like the turning point of the film, much like Andrew Bynum's injury.
Heyo, look at you.
Is that for the Cavs?
And they have Sergei Karasev. I'm sure there's a foreigner on that boat. Right? This all fits in.
I'm sure they have a foreigner on that boat.
Did I just say something offensive and not realize it?
I don't think so. It just sounds like
Kyrie Irving's Australian? There. Russell Crowe's Australian? There we go. That's the tie-in I wanted. Not the potentially xenophobic thing I said.
For anyone that's seen the movie, Dion Waiters is the lizard. That's where this ends up going. Bynum, this leads us into some news. So Bynum, Bynum gets signed by the Cavs, and immediately all of the reporters in Cleveland, and I don't blame them because this is kind of your job and you're just saying what you see, and I get that. It's a little irritating because a lot of time beat reporters don't pay attention to what goes on nationally very intently. Right. Like, you and I track multiple national storylines with these teams all year round, so we oftentimes – that's why fans are always kind of surprised. Like, national columnists traditionally don't track a lot of these storylines. But I'll run into fans and they're always like, wow, you really know a lot about the Cavaliers or the Suns. I'm like, this is what I do. I get very in-depth on all the teams consistently. So anyway, getting back to it, Bynum signs and they start talking about, you know, it may not mean anything, but boy, Andrew Bynum is in the facility every day working hard. He's really shown a great attitude. Everything looks really great. He's making really great progress. Everyone's been really impressed. And then another one of these columns came out the other day from Mary Schmidt Boyer, who's a really good beat writer, but she was writing about how, Bynum, like, everything looks good. Like, he's on – and the tagline was, like, he's on schedule. But below that is, what is that schedule? Oh, we don't really have one. We have no – and he said, I have no idea what my schedule is going to be. And then real quietly at the start of a paragraph, he hasn't resumed full court activities yet.
That, I mean, I guess we have enough time. I mean, we're a month away, we're less than a month away from the first preseason game. And we're about, I don't know, like 4 weeks or so, maybe a little less than, maybe about 3 weeks from training camp opening, right? And
yeah.
I guess that's enough time to keep working and get yourself to full court activities. I mean, I guess that's the problem is we don't have a schedule for him, and so we don't know. And I agree with you. Like, the beat reporters there, one, you have to do that because that's pretty much the only news going on with the Cavs right now, right? Is, hey, Andrew Bynum signed. Hey, he's working out here. He's working hard. He's always here. Like, you're gonna get traction out of that, and that is an off-season story for them. So I get that. And plus, like, you kind of have to throw those stories in there here and there because you got to be around him. You've got to develop a rapport with him. You know, like, that's just part of the nature of the business. So that's all right. And it's gonna. And if you skew it, you know, if you skew it a little friendlier than maybe it should be, that, you know, that's good for traffic and all that stuff. And I have no problem with any of those reports. And, you know, that's just the nature of the beast. But there is always that little thing below of like, oh, by the way, he's not doing basketball activities. Or by the way, he's not doing full court activities. It's like, I feel like that should be higher in the story.
I repackaged it as Bynum has no idea when he's going to be back, and he hasn't gotten back to full court. But that, to me, is the story.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be a pessimist with the Cavaliers. Cavs fans, I will pause here to let you scream at me. I'm not trying to be a pessimist here for them. I actually think that they've got a really good shot. I was thinking about this last night when I was driving. I was running some errands with my kid, and I wanted to bring this up to you. Do the Cavaliers have the widest range of possible win totals of any team in the league in terms of best case, worst case scenario?
You know, I actually don't think they do because I like the core as is. I mean, what did they win last year? 23 wins? Something like that? It's got to be around that, right? 24 wins.
24. Well done.
Okay. 24 wins last year. Not good, but not atrocious, right? Like, you can kind of, a young team wins 24 games. A bump up into the 30s isn't crazy the next year, and then a bump up, you know, just keeping that core together, and then a bump there to challenge for the playoffs is not crazy either. So 24 wins, and then they added Andrew Bynum. I think, like, even if they didn't have Bynum this year, and let's say Kyrie stays healthy, everyone stays relatively healthy, you've got a decent young team that I think can win, I don't know, 32, 33 games, something like that. Like, best case scenario, I think. And then you add Bynum into that, I think you can challenge for a playoff spot in the East, but I think with 37, 38 wins in the East, you challenge for a playoff spot this year. Like, I don't think it's going to take a winning record or a 500 record to do that. And so I actually think, like, their window is not necessarily that big. I just think that it's very definitive. Like, I don't think they can make the playoffs without Bynum, but I don't think that they are, like, necessarily a winning team with Bynum either, if that makes sense.
I was looking at Basketball Reference and their SRS metric, which factors in average point differential and strength of schedule. They wound up 27th in the league in terms of SRS, which is not good,
right,
compared to a lot of other teams. And it's, you know, not crazy, but it's obviously not good. I think that my thing is, if everything goes right, I think they can legitimately win. If everything goes right, and there's a lot, but if a lot of things go right, Waiters takes a step forward, Bynum is healthy, Bynum is even healthy for half the year, Varejão is healthy, and Kyrie gets himself back on track in terms of doesn't have any more of the freak injuries and is able to progress like he should, I think they can legitimately win 45. I think three games over 500.
That sounds really high to me. I mean, I don't know that I don't think it's crazy. That just sounds really high to me. I guess it makes sense if you factor in Kyrie missed 15 games 2 years ago in his rookie season, and last year he missed 23 games.
Yeah.
Played 59 last year. Varejão only played in 25 games last year, and they still won 24. Like, that's a big thing. I think Tristan Thompson, he's shooting free throws right-handed now, which
you
apparently
love that story.
It's crazy to me how you could not know which hand. Like, this would be like becoming a Major League Baseball player batting left-handed, and then someone says, "Hey, why don't you try it from the right side?" And all of a sudden, you're a power hitter. Like, that's crazy to me. Like, that's just a crazy story.
Between him and Rudy Gay, it makes you wonder.
Like, what if Tim Tebow was actually a right-handed quarterback? And, like, all of a sudden he's got a cannon, like an accurate cannon. Like, that's what it sounds like to me.
I think that, but on the flip side of it, I think that even if Kyrie doesn't have any of the freak injuries, Bynum has what happens to him. Barrejo's had problems. Now, Barrejo's had some weird issues. I'll admit that, but yeah. He has had repetitive issues over the last couple of years. If he has another problem, Waiters doesn't take a step forward, there's a great chance to me that they could only win like 28. They can only take improve by four. I think no matter what, they'll improve by at least four games. But it's crazy to me that you could be between 28, and even if we drop it down, let's say 500. 28, because 500 will probably, like you said, will probably get into the playoffs. I would say it definitely will.
Yeah, I think 500 gets you the seventh seed.
Right. So they can win between 28 and 41 games. There's a 13-game differential in there versus I think with a lot of teams, the window is much tighter.
Yeah.
Even the Bucks, I think you and I would agree, it's only they could win.
I would guess 30 to 38.
I would say even lower. I would say 30 to 35.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
You know, but with Cleveland, I feel like there's just a huge differential. And it could be really great, and I genuinely hope it is because while I don't have venom in my heart for LeBron doing what he did, I'm kind of like, hey, why don't you go somewhere else? That's what he did. Sucked the way he did it, but it's over. I don't blame Cleveland fans for still being mad, but I do want good things to happen to them. I don't want them to be mired in mediocrity forever, mostly because it would help them chill out maybe.
See, I find the Cleveland fans to be – well, at least the ones I've dealt with on the internet, which I – no, is a very small sample to actual Cleveland fans, but I find them to be quite an unruly group of people.
Oh, they're angry. They're one of the angry. The small market teams are usually pretty angry. The big market teams are usually pretty. I would say their internet personalities tend to be pretty arrogant.
Yeah.
Because they get to be. They're boastful. Like they live in somewhere awesome and their team is great. The small market teams, like the Spurs fans, are really
angry. Except for the people in Boston. I think Boston's a terrible city.
I like Boston, but I can understand why you wouldn't. But Spurs fans tend to be pretty angry. Cavaliers fans tend to be pretty angry. Maybe it's probably born out of the inferiority complex and some of that, but a lot of it, I think, is just it's kind of a product of the of where you live. Like they're just kind of plays a part in it. Kansas City is a pretty mean town. I lived there. It's pretty mean because I would tell people, I moved from Austin. They're like, where'd you move from? I was like, Austin. And then everyone's response in Kansas City was really funny. It was, oh, why did you move here? And that's when I was like, oh, no. I love you, Kansas City. I was born there. How good does Deion Waiters need to be next season?
I honestly think he's kind of inconsequential for next season.
Ooh.
If Bynum is healthy and Barishaw is healthy – and then you've got Tristan Thompson off the bench or however they divide up those minutes, and you've got Anthony Bennett in there. I think the Bynum Varejao Kyrie combination is good enough to be a playoff team, and I don't know that Deion Waiters being good or bad. I mean, obviously if he was good, it would matter, but I don't think being bad with that set of circumstances hurts their team all that much. Varejao has really been hurt.
Yeah,
I'm looking over his career number. He's had three healthy seasons in his 9-year career. He's had a year of 81 games, a year of 81 games, and a year of 76 games. And then other than that, he's never played more than 54 games in a year.
And the response to that is that last year was a blood clot. It's just really hard to make a case that he's got an injury issue when you respond with he had a life-threatening blood clot.
Right. He just has terrible luck with the stuff, I guess. I love watching him play. I mean, I know a lot of NBA people do, but he's so fun to watch on both ends of the floor.
Oh, he's great. He's fantastic. He was on pace to be an All-Star last year. That's how good he was, even on a terrible team. It takes a lot to get there.
He averaged 14-14 in 25 games last year.
Yep.
That's not bad.
Not bad. Googling Varejao out for the season returns 368,000 results in 0.25 seconds.
That sounds like a lot.
And it's not just 2013. A lot of it is, but then you got 2011, torn ligament.
Yeah, I mean, the last 3 years he played 31 games, 25 games in a 66-game season, and then 25 games last year. Dude has just not been around. You would be nice on Basketball Reference, which I don't know how they would do this to retroactively do it. I would like an injury history right under the salary section.
Yeah, I would too.
That would be cool.
I definitely would like that.
Get on that, guys. I know you have plenty of time to just do stuff I need.
And then, okay, so in 2012, he broke his wrist. Right. And that's not like a repetitive injury. That's a one-timer.
Right.
And then 2011.
A knee injury, maybe?
I think it was. I want to say it was the knee.
I vaguely remember a knee injury a couple years ago.
Right, his ankle.
Ankle, that's what it was.
Yeah. So you got an ankle, a wrist, and a blood clot.
The blood clot seems like the least likely to happen again to me.
One would think.
I would hope for his safety.
And see, this is where Conrad, our good friend Conrad, would start saying, you cannot call him injury prone, much like the same thing with Kyrie, because he keeps breaking different things, because these different things keep happening. This gets back to, I do think the question of, is a player, how do you define injury prone, is really interesting. I think it's an interesting concept, because there are guys, like Bynum is injury prone because his knees keep going out.
Right.
If you keep having problems with different parts of your body, are you unlucky?
No.
And that is sure to end? Or is there something with your body? Medically, I can't answer this question.
Right. I think you can be injury prone without having an injury prone area.
Yeah.
Like your body's injury prone, right? Like I've never put...
The phrase comes from the idea that you're one of those people that's just kind of clumsy and it happens. Now, these are obviously some of the most coordinated people on the planet, but.
Right, like if you're an accident prone person, are you only accident prone if you slip on a banana peel every time?
Right.
I've never actually thought about this, so I'm just trying to vomit out of my brain right now, my thoughts on the subject, but I don't agree. I think you can be injury prone and just have different injuries all the time.
Right. So I think the Cavs have both now. They have injury prone guys that have just suffered a series of random maladies, and they have an injury prone guy that has a consistent issue.
Yeah, I would.
That makes you nervous, right? Because you're basically gambling on you need three guys that have consistently missed time to not miss time.
I'm not so worried with it with Kyrie, just because, I mean, I know it's been 2 out of the 2 years he's been in the league, so hey, that's not a great percentage. But I think maybe if he gets injured randomly again this year that keeps him out double-digit games, then I'll start thinking, okay, this guy's injury-prone. Like, it's maybe I treat it like three-point shooting accuracy, where I'm like, 1 year, I'm not worried. 2 years, okay, starting to think about it. 3 years, all right, now you're set in this role.
This is who you are.
Yeah, this is who you are. So I think Kyrie, I'm not sold on him being injury-prone yet. I think Varejão and Bynum are definitely injury-prone.
Yeah.
And this is a problem for Varejão even before the random, and scary blood clot. Like, it's not like that was, just one of his few seasons. Like, the majority of his career, he's been injury prone.
One of the interesting things with this team, they have a lot of fun lineups they can throw out. Not necessarily good ones, but different ones. And I like that. I like positional flexibility.
Yeah.
I mean, you could see a potential lineup of Kyrie Irving, Jarrett, Jack, Sergei Karasev, Anthony Bennett, Anderson Varejão.
Yeah, that would be fun.
You could see Kyrie, Waiters, Alonzo G, Earl Clark, Andrew Bynum. I know you don't like Clark, but just as a
role. I was just about to bring him up because I swear I'm not trolling you. I would like their offseason more if they hadn't spent $9 million on Earl Clark.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's... See, the thing is, it just didn't bother me because I was like, oh no, that's the Laker contract. It's like part of the NBA.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, one of the Pargo brothers has to be employed by the NBA.
He does.
And annually, a Laker has to get overpaid because of his contributions to what is usually an uninspiring team. This has been Trevor Ariza, go on down the line. Jordan Farmar had a big deal for a short term deal. Like,
And I realize I'm being a little hypocritical here because I've always said, the last 2 years I've said, hey, I don't think 2-year deals are bad deals. And I don't really think it's a bad deal for them to necessarily sign Earl Clark on a 2-year deal because it's essentially a 1-year deal and then you can use him as an expiring. And I still firmly believe in that strategy. But I do think, like, I would rather see CJ Miles out there and Alonzo G out there.
Yeah.
And Sergei Karasev.
I like the flexibility it gives them. I think part of it with me is, and I mentioned this when they put the team together, I like the idea of putting Anthony Bennett and Clark together on the floor, because I feel like Clark can cover the guys that Bennett can't, and it gives you a little bit of coverage for what you need to do there, and it gives you a guy that not Bennett doesn't need to model himself after, obviously, but it gives him at least a guy that has some similar characteristics, even though Clark's a lot longer. There's a little bit of thing there. By the way, do you remember that in 2010 Sasha Vujicic made $5 million with the Los Angeles Lakers?
That sounds excessive.
$5.5 million in 2011 with the Nets.
What did Ramon Sessions get?
What?
What did Ramon Sessions get in free agency?
With the Bobcats?
Yeah. What was it, five a year? He's getting five this year.
Riveting podcasting right here, by the way. 2 year, $10 million contract, July 2000.
That's ridiculous.
I like him. I've always liked him. I know. I don't have a problem with it.
I know I get a lot of stuff wrong, but I am really happy that I nailed that Ramon. Like, he was not good for the Lakers. He's not a good point guard. Like, he can be a backup, I guess. A backup point guard and be fine. I just don't think he's good.
I think in general I have lower standards than you. I think that that's what I was thinking. Well, for players at least. But I think I feel like in general that I have higher standards for centers maybe than you do, and you have higher standards for point guards than I do.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Maybe in forwards. And forwards we rarely match up, but I think we have the same standards just for different players.
Especially when it comes to DJ Augustine.
I will never give up. I will never give up on DJ. But yeah, so I didn't mind the Clark deal from that perspective, but I just feel like they have got a lot of positional flexibility. Karasev's interesting. I'm always of the mold of I want to see what this guy does, because the transition is not – it's hard. It's hard for guys to go from college to the NBA, and it's hard for guys to go from overseas to the NBA. The NBA is its own thing that you have to adjust to. There's lots of guys that are awesome in EuroLeague ball, like Navarro, good Lord. La Bamba is amazing.
Yeah, and I think you can look at even a guy that they just got rid of as kind of a warning sign of Omri Caspi kind of popped up out of nowhere right before the draft, I feel like. And there are similarities between him and Karasev just from that standpoint. And then Caspi came over. He was fantastic the first 2 months. I mean, he was really, really good as a rookie role player.
Yeah.
Even on a bad team, and it looked like, wow, the Kings have a gem with this guy, and then the league just kind of figured him out, and he just wasn't that good. And I'm not saying that's going to happen to Karasev, but I think bringing a guy like that along slowly to get him, and they have the depth to do it, I think that's better than thinking, hey, this guy's a first round pick, he should come in and play 20 minutes a game as a rookie. Like, I don't think Karasev has that necessarily that kind of ability right now, and I would like to see them bring him along slowly so you don't see a flame out like that. Because I do think he's really good.
I've heard that there were scouts that said that he was like the guy that they thought could make an impact, that could come in because he was just going to basically be a corner shooter.
Right, because he can allegedly shoot, but we don't actually know that he can shoot.
Right, that's a good point. So yeah, they've got a lot of things that they can do. They can run out a lot of different lineups. I still maintain, I firmly believe that their closing lineup will be Irving, Jack, Waiters. I still think that they're going to move. I think Waiters will start at the two and finish at the three. I think they're going to do a lot of the same stuff they did with Jack in Golden State.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be – and I like that a lot. I love the idea of if you have a closing lineup of – even if you have to take Bynum out because of, you know, whatever, the traditional big man problems. Like if your closing lineup is –
because you're worried he's going to punch a point guard.
Right, if he's going to punch a point guard. Or punt one. Irving, Jack, Waiters, and then whoever you want at the four. Tristan, Earl Clark in a small ball lineup. Whoever, if you want to spread the floor with Clark, that's okay too. Bennett, if he works out. And then Varejao. That's a really good closing unit. And it's good defensively. It's good on both ends, depending on how Kyrie is able to handle himself this year.
Is this the least talked about number one overall pick we've ever had?
There's got to be a worse one.
Oh, at least, all right, let's say in the last 10 probably years. But I feel like Bargnani was talked about, though. Like, I don't feel like anyone has paid any attention to Bennett, mainly because, one, nobody expected him to be picked number one. Like, either the Cavs panicked or they hid that extremely well. Like, I don't think anybody expected him to go number one overall. Yeah. And then he had the shoulder injury, couldn't, you know, play in summer league, and so it's just been like he's just been kind of non-existent this entire offseason. And then because of they signed Bynum, they've got Varejao, they've already got Thompson and Zeller. Like, there's so much weird depth there that you don't know how he's going to fit in. I just feel like he's been completely overlooked. And I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. I don't know if it's justified or not justified. I just find it weird that a number one overall pick who is going to be healthy for the season, like, this isn't like Greg Oden who has to have microfractures, you know, his first summer. Like, this is Anthony Bennett is supposedly going to be healthy. He's the number one overall pick, and he's just no one talks about him at all.
It's a storm of factors. So, the weakest draft we've seen since 2000.
Sure.
Right. The fact that he was drafted as a surprise, like you said, he was drafted to a team that already has
a star.
Anderson, Varejao, and Tristan Thompson. You don't really know what role he's going to play, and that's. People had that question before he got to the Cavs. That was what made the Cavaliers pick so interesting slash weird, is there was already like, all right, what's Anthony Bennett really going to be in the NBA? He's a small power forward. Where is he going to fit? And then like Cleveland took him. And it's like, where in the hell is he going to fit on Cleveland?
Yeah, I mean,
and then they signed Bynum, and you're like, where in the hell is Anthony Bennett going to get?
Right,
go
like on? I feel like if they had taken Nerlens Noel number one, even without playing, he's got the injury, whatever. I still feel like we'd be talking about him.
Yeah, we would be. I definitely think we would be.
It's just weird to me that the number one overall pick is such a like a incognito aspect of the NBA season to start.
No one really knows much about Bennett, honestly.
No, because I mean, he played in like not a small conference, but a smallish big conference. You know, like. UNLV, like, UNLV used to be a big deal. It's not really a big deal anymore. Like, it's just weird. It's really weird.
It is. I would agree. It's very weird.
I would like us to have a month of, like, Anthony Bennett month in October just to prepare for the season. It would just make me feel better.
He's also Canadian.
That's another problem. I mean, it's not a problem. That came out wrong. What I mean is, like, nobody seems to care about any Canadian that's not named Andrew Wiggins.
Give me some Raptor news. Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird overall thing, but I like the kid. I liked him in the draft. I didn't necessarily mind the Cavaliers drafting him just because I was like, well, he might be one of the better players of the draft. And if you don't think that you need one of the guards, which they obviously didn't, it's a totally fine pick.
Yeah.
So,
I want to see the Cavs in the postseason just because I want to see Kyrie Irving in the postseason. Like he's just so. Damn fun to watch. Even like I hate his defense. I hate, you know, they had to hide him last year or whatever. I think there are problems. Other people aren't as concerned about it. I think it could be a problem, but overall, like, he's just so damn fun to watch on offense. He's so good on offense that I don't even care about it. Like, I care about it to a certain degree, but at a certain point I'm just like, eh, screw it, I just want to watch him play.
You better be awesome on offense if you're going to be that bad defense.
And
but he's that awesome on offense.
Yeah, he is that awesome on offense. I don't, and like immediately it's like, oh, is he going to be a top 5 point guard? Like, I don't care about where he ranks. I just like watching him.
I think it's some of the attitude stuff worried me last year. There were little things that made me kind of nervous.
How much of that is an attitude problem, and how much of that is maybe trying to desperately get his team to get a winning mentality?
I think some of it is just attitude, because I think he's got, how about this, stuff like bailing on fan appreciation night. That's not leadership. That's just,
yeah, that was weird. There was a reason for it though, right?
I don't remember the weird, and I guess that's important. We should probably
and
look it up.
Let me just say, we will have already looked it up by the time this podcast is posted.
Don't share.
Don't need your tweets. I appreciate it though. Appreciate the listen.
Thanks for following. Don't reply. Don't talk to us. And then there was
there was some vague.
He went back and forth on Byron. Like he had the opportunity to basically be like, I don't want Byron fired, whatever. And he kind of couched it. And some of that's like an awkward situation, right? If you're hearing that the coach is going to get fired anyway, and you're basically like, I don't want to go against my bosses. Like, this isn't it, you know, I can't save him. And it's kind of a weird situation.
And honestly, what if he just didn't care if Byron was the coach or not? Like, he could like Byron and think he's decent at the job, but think, like, there are better options out there, you know?
And then, like, he clarified it again, and, like, he tried to fix it. I mean, and most of this is just that he's young. So it's these are things that are totally forgivable. It's just things that start when you're young become patterns.
Sure.
You want to make sure that they don't evolve into bigger things. The kid has a remarkable team around him in terms of people that are managing him, but that's a good thing and a bad thing sometimes because he's got a lot of people around him telling him how awesome he is, and it takes a lot of leadership in order to handle being the guy for the Cavs. He's the guy for the Cavs in Cleveland.
Post-LeBron, yeah.
That's a big responsibility that he didn't ask for, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he didn't ask to be in that situation. And it's tough, and he's gonna. And the other thing is, he's friends with LeBron, and it's not just LeBron. He's been accepted and embraced by all of the stars in the NBA, and all of the stars in the NBA, for the most part, have one central message to the young guys: look out for yourself.
Yes,
this is a business. They don't care about you. You take care of yourself because you don't want to find yourself being 30 and still trying to win a championship. Signed, Kevin Garnett.
Yep, he was the poster child for that for the last decade, and it's, you know, it is the reason, I feel it's the big reason that LeBron got out. I think it's the reason Carmelo got out. You know, like, that is a factor. You can, if you in, well, whatever you feel about Chris Grant and his decisions in Cleveland, in constructing this roster and draft decisions, like, whether you think it's good or bad, if the star doesn't trust the direction, then that's a problem. They're all, you know, at this point, they're all going to worry about their legacy because that's all we end up talking about.
Yeah.
Like, you and I try to not to talk about that, but at a certain point, everyone ends up talking about that.
Chris Grant's one of those guys. He's the guy that actually reminds me of David Kahn.
Now the Cleveland tweets are going to come into you.
Yeah. Well, hear me out. I think he's much better than David Kahn. I think that there's a much greater chance of him having success than David Kahn. The reason I say that is, Kahn had this habit of he would set himself up for success. Like, he would put himself into a position to make the good decision and then not do it.
Right.
Like, back-to-back picks, 4 and 5. Awesome. This is fantastic. The Wolves are going to be great. Took 2 point guards.
Right.
Got cap room. Awesome. They're going to be able to add some quality veterans and bring things along slowly. Signed Darko Milicic, 4 years, $20 million. Now, none of these moves here remind me of that. Bynum is the closest thing that you can get to that. I'm not going to kill them if Bynum winds up not working out. It was worth the gamble. It's only $6 million. It's fine. Like, overall, it was definitely worth it. I just worry that Grant's been very active, but he's also one of those guys where – we've seen this with multiple picks now where it's been kind of a weird situation for what they wanted to do, and they kept trying to trade the pick and could never get high enough value. There's kind of a notoriety that the Cavs are always asking for too much.
Yeah.
Which isn't a bad thing.
If someone says, like, you just need one team to say yes, right?
Yeah. And they wound up going outside the box with Bennett. And again, he could be really good. That's the only thing that kind of reminds me of Kahn. But he's much more liked in the community from what I can tell from everyone else that knows him. He's much smarter by all accounts. He's made much better decisions. He's done a lot better in team building. Like, he hasn't made a series of disasters. It's more of, I keep waiting for the big payoff, and the big explosive payoff hasn't happened outside of Kyrie, which was partly him, but partly not. So.
Right. Yeah, I think that's all fair. I mean, I don't know that I would categorize it as that maybe self-destructive, but I get it. Like, I get what you're saying.
There are Kahn-like qualities without being like Kahn, is how I would
say. Yeah, that makes sense.
But the thing is, though, Kyrie gets healthy, Bynum works out and stays healthy, and Waiters progresses, and all of a sudden Chris Grant's looking at a very good possibility of being executive of the year.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, absolutely.
He's a dark horse for that award. I got to look up what the odds are for him for executive of the year, because I would gamble on something like that. And I would definitely think that he'd be a great dark horse candidate for that.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
It's too bad that none of the Cavaliers fans heard that, because they all just clicked off the podcast and yell at me when they heard David Kahn.
So what do you give them for the offseason? Royce Young gave them a B.
So you spend money and you make draft picks and everything is based on what you think, what is a reasonable idea of the best that they can be, right?
Right.
And you have to factor risk. I would give them an A-.
Okay.
I think that if you're willing to – they couch the Bynum deal enough. Now, if it doesn't work out, you're still throwing away $6 million. I don't like the argument, oh, it doesn't matter, it's just $6 million. They're still only 60 for the year, so that doesn't really impact them. I don't love it. I wouldn't have gone after him, but it was a home run type of move. And I get that they want to – they really want to get Kyrie a winning experience so that he doesn't go psycho, and I can appreciate that. I like the Bennett pick overall.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the second year is fully unguaranteed, that makes it a no-brainer to me.
Yeah. I like that they didn't move Alonzo G, they didn't move CJ Miles. I don't care anything about Tyler Zeller. I like the Karasev pick. Carrick Felix has a lot of people talking.
Sure.
Did you see him in Summer League?
Yeah.
Was he good?
Yeah.
Yeah, not impressed?
He wasn't bad. I didn't look at him and think that guy needs to be on an NBA roster.
As much as Jarrett Jack is hated by the Golden State community, I really like what Jack is going to be able to give Irving, which is another consistent ball handler who he can trust. There's the clutch issue, which is fine, but Steph also hit a lot of big shots down the stretch last year, too. It's not like he was constantly overstepped by Jack.
Right.
I really like that. That Kyrie-Jack Waiters combo. I think that could be really good.
Yeah, Jack didn't shoot well from the field, but he was good from three-point line in clutch situations.
He was another one. We need to come up with a term for those guys that their field goal percentage looks bad, but their EFG looks good.
Yeah.
And not just J.R. Smith.
Right.
Actual. We need to set up some sort of record for how many times I mentioned J.R. Smith on our podcast.
It's almost as many as we mentioned Miley Cyrus at one point. Which I think I just started again.
Or Tara Reid, actually.
Tara Reid, that's going to be the benchmark.
You didn't do the tweet today.
She didn't tweet. She's in Canada.
Which is why we're not talking about her, right. See? Because it's her and Anthony Bennett, same kind of deal.
Exactly.
What's the disaster? How bad would their disasters? I said that they could win like 28 games at the minimum.
I mean,
what is like the disaster situation in your mind for them?
The disaster is that Bynum doesn't play. Varejao gets hurt again and misses the majority of the season. Kyrie misses half the season with various injuries, and they win 21 games.
Yeah,
I do think. I mean, we talked a little bit earlier this week, but. The Mike Brown hiring, while it is recycling coaches, like, I still think he's a very good coach. I don't think he's a coach that I'd necessarily want being the head coach on a contender, like a title contender. But for a team like that, like, who's so bad defensively and needs a little bit of direction, like, I think he's good with young players. And I think it was a really good hiring.
I'm on the fence about it for a number of reasons. I think one of the things that I've always wondered if he could be a guy that could develop young talent, and that the Lakers thing was just a bad fit because that's not who he is. I like that there are, to a certain degree, lowered expectations. I like the idea of them focusing on defense. I liked what he's done historically with point guards. I just think that the fans' patience is going to be a lot lower with him. Guys you don't know get a longer leash. And with them not knowing him, if things go rough, I'm tired of Mike Brown getting crapped on by everyone. I'm just like, the guy works hard and he's a good coach. Can we just chill out a little bit? Because like with the Lakers thing, I keep going back to, no one was good with them, you know? Except
right.
for Bickerstaff. Like, that's, like, They don't. That team was a train wreck.
Well, and he got 5 games.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a fair shake. Even if, no matter what the situation, like, they went 41-25 in his first year with the team. And if you didn't agree with the signing then, that's fine. Like, I'm fine with him not being a fit for that team. But he's still a good coach. Like, to me, this is like this is entering Larry Brown territory, where it's like Larry Brown had a bad stint with the Knicks, and now all of a sudden he's a horrible coach. It's like, no, Larry Brown's a really good coach. Like, he may not have the right personality to coach every team, but he's a really good coach.
Versus someone, and not that, and he could be. He the other thing is that this person I'm about to mention could become a good coach in the future, but John Kuster was an unparalleled disaster.
Right.
Like, that was an epic, oh my God, everything went wrong kind of thing. Like, Mike Dunlap had a more successful reign than John Kuster.
There was a coup against him.
Yeah. When your veterans stage a coup,
that's typically a problem.
And one of them is like a franchise, you know, icon in Rip Hamilton. It's not a good look.
Right.
Felt weird to say. Is he? I don't know. Could you qualify him as like a franchise icon?
Yeah, enough.
Like, if you go down the list, it's like Isaiah. It's like Dumars, Isaiah, Lambeer, Chauncey, Shee, Tayshaun.
Did you say Ben Wallace probably, already?
Ben Wallace.
Like, he's probably a top 10 icon for the team over the last 30 years.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I would think of any being an icon at all, because I don't think I'm ever going to be an icon of anything. So the only way I'm an icon is if it winds up being bad.
He was their leading scorer the year they won the championship.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
it deserves something.
Yeah, it deserved a ring. That's what it deserved.
I like how we always start these podcasts and we're like, man, we have nothing to talk about, and then by the end of it, we're like, wow.
I honestly have no idea what we've talked about other than the Cavs this entire podcast.
Some weird stuff happened, man. It got weird. The X-Files was in there, and Master and Command. You made a comment about Foreigner. It was...
Yeah, I mean, I think that we also have a streak of two xenophobic podcasts in a row. Because it was you yesterday, me today. What will happen Monday? Who knows?
Everyone, please go to iTunes and subscribe and give us ratings and leave a comment for our reviews. This stuff really helps us. It's really big for us trying to expand, quote unquote, the brand, but that mostly means getting this podcast in front of more people so we can continue to do it and bring you guys better stuff and get guests and equipment, as I know most of you hate the way we sound.
That's just like us, that. Actually. That's just...
I got news for you. Equipment ain't going to make this sound any better.
I actually would like fewer people to listen. I just want I want more people to download, but I want fewer people to listen. That's my goal.
It's like Twitter.
Yes. Oh, that's right. That's what I learned today. I'm eliminating my timeline.
I'm serious, man. I'm dead. You really need to go down this road and try it. I think that your life. I think you would be like, God, this is really amazing because I get to talk about all the things I want, and nothing annoys me. Because if you go back, like, I this is what I've discovered. Like, here's a good idea. I hate this tanking conversation that's going on. If this were 2007 and I was just reading it on blogs, I would just flip to the next thing in my reader, and then we're done.
Right.
You know? Twitter makes it to where there's constantly these things that are coming up to you, and that's when you get annoyed, because it's like someone chatting right outside your office about it. And yeah. You don't mind it for a little bit, but eventually you're like, I don't want to hear about this anymore.
And I don't wear pants in my office, so it gets awkward.
It does get awkward. You don't want people seeing... Yeah, so... Go on, and I would tell you, delete your timeline, and then Monday, we'll see how it worked out.
No, I think this is a great idea. Real quick, if I told you to guess who was the three-point percentage leader in the 2005-2006 season, how many guesses would it take before you got to Rip Hamilton?
Oh, God. I would have...
I just noticed that, and my God, it shocked me.
It would have taken me 30 people before I got there, only because after the first 15, I would have started going through top scorers on every team.
Right.
But, God, that's 40, crazy.
45.8%. League leader that year. You learn something new every day. I learned how to delete my timeline and that Rip Hamilton used to be a good shooter.
The more you know.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt.